The American Dream. What is the American Dream?
The American Dream is freedom, jobs, food, family. At least, it is supposed to be. But I think the real question is, what is home?
In this poem, Home, the author, Warson Shear, explains how home is not always the safe place everyone dreams of.
No one leaves home unless home is the mouth of a shark. You only run for the border when you see the whole city running as well. Even when we think home is the safest place to be, the mouth of the shark will always be there. We are fortunate to have a place where we get to be safe, and home will always be in the same spot. But if we take a tour around the other side of the world, home will never be in the same place. It will never be the place where they want to go. We take home for granted when others' home is the only thing they want.
You only leave home when home will let you stay.
You have to understand, no one puts their children in a boat, unless the water is safer than the land. No one burns their palms under trains, beneath carriages. No one spends days and nights in the stomach of a truck, feeding on newspapers, unless the miles traveled means something more than the journey. No one crawls under fences. No one wants to be beaten, pitied. Unless the miles traveled mean more than the journey. These words are so strong. Usually when you think of worrying too much, or about getting to a destination, people tell you to enjoy the journey. But in this case, that's not true. When you're running from home, you don't have time to think about the journey. When you're running, the thing you worry about is how far. How far are you able to be safe from the place that is supposed to be home?
No one chooses refugee camps, or strip searches where your body is left aching, or prison, because prison is safer than a city of fire.
I want to go home. But home is the mouth of a shark. Home is the barrel of the gun. And no one wants to leave home, unless home chased you to the shore, unless home told you to quicken your legs, leave your clothes behind, crawl through the deserts, wade through the oceans, drown, save, be hunger, beg, forget pride. Your survival is more important. This excerpt is very homesick and sad, a longing for something to call home.
No one leaves home until home is a sweaty voice saying, leave, run away from me now. I don't know what I'd become, but I know anywhere is safer than here. When the author says no one leaves home until it's a sweaty voice saying leave, I think she's saying that nobody really wants to leave their home until they're being forced against their will. Sometimes even home, even the place you thought was safe, the place that you'd live in forever, knows you should leave. Sometimes it whispers in your ears with war or earthquakes or famine and drought. It whispers anywhere is safer than here.
Welcome to Caution, a podcast where we talk about American history and how America is looked upon as the same lie it's always been.
Irish immigration. Irish immigration was mainly the result of the Great Irish Potato Famine, 1845 to 52. A disease plagued potatoes, the main source of food for the mainly low-income Irish, causing them to immigrate in huge numbers to the United States. Before the famine, life wasn't easy. In 1841, there was a census that found that nearly half of Ireland's population lived in windowless mud cabins. When the famine hit Ireland, they were forced to the United States. This wasn't any better for the Irish because they were treated just as badly as other immigrant groups, such as the Chinese and African Americans. They quickly were pitted against each other. Since the Irish were white, it was much easier for them to assimilate into American culture. They did this by treating other immigrant groups as Americans had treated them.
Chinese immigration.
There were surges in immigration to the U.S. around 1849, 1882, and 1965. Most of the immigrants came from China and were seeking a better life in the U.S. One of the main pull factors making the U.S. appealing was the California Gold Rush of 1848. Many of these immigrants were living hard lives in China with very little money and food. There were many natural disasters that also made China very unsafe to the people who lived there. The gold rush gave these people the opportunity to collect riches and create a better life for themselves and their families. Unfortunately, like most immigrant stories, the U.S. wasn't at all like advertised.
Sure, the first wave of immigrants were fortunate and did find gold in the West.
That was short-lived.
After stories of their success made their way into the Chinese minds, people were enchanted by the idea of the U.S. Soon, waves of immigrants swept into America, taking the jobs of Irish immigrants. Skipping forward a few years, the Chinese started to be hated in the U.S. Their rights to testify in court were taken away, which led to a surge in hate crimes against them. Many were gruesome and often ended up with the Chinese gold that they had worked hard for stolen, or the death of their families and themselves. Since no one could testify against the perpetrators, many, if not all, of these crimes went unpunished.
Yeah, and I think the gold rush is one of like the main stories that you hear about Chinese like immigration. Like, that's the first thing I learned about Chinese immigration. And because like that's how it started.
Yeah.
And like after the gold rush, it ended many of these immigrants, and so they had to find new jobs. One of the jobs that was open to them were nannies and caretakers in white households, and many Chinese men took them. This was a problematic, considering that the whites already viewed them as lesser. These jobs were the perfect way to assimilate the Chinese into American culture. They were learning English and manners, sometimes even learning how to write, but not as equal as servants. These jobs were like servant jobs. Just like these were also usually given to the women. Since Chinese men were taking feminine jobs, they were more seen as feminine. At this time, that meant that they were more submissive, gentle, I don't know what that word is.
Docile
and timid. They were being accepted, but accepted only as servants. As lesser than white counterparts, stereotypes can be very hurtful, especially in cases where the stereotypes are about minority groups.
So, I'm Asian, specifically and racially Chinese. I have many different cultures, but racially I'm Chinese, so. I'm a first-generation U.S. citizen. Some stereotypes that I've experienced in my life, most people would think is beneficial, but nobody really sees what it does to somebody on the inside. Tiger parents, that's a big stereotype. Yeah, I have stricter parents, but I wouldn't call them tigers. They push me to do well in school and have rules for me that some of my friends don't. I used to hate it, but truly I'm grateful. I do feel like there's more pressure for me to do well in school, and sometimes it does get to the point where I feel like I'm not being myself and hiding under a mask of what people think about me or want me to be. I love my race and my family's history. I'm grateful for how my family fought for me to be here today. I know it sounds very cliche, but I really do. My family has fought racism and hate crimes for centuries. Isn't it funny? I'm a Mayflower child on my dad's side. The original colonists, the ones who brought racism into the U.S. But I'm also my mother's child. My mother is an immigrant. I'm a great example of how race and background doesn't have to have an effect on anything, not in school, or housing, or government. Nobody should be punished because of their religion or the color of their skin.
That's like such a great personal story.
Yeah.
Of like the difference of like how different two sides of your family can be.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like, sometimes people will say, oh, go back to this country or something. But really, like, they don't know, like, how long you've been there. Like, for example, like, even if you were a first-generation immigrant, like, you belong there, really.
have heard about the flood of Haitian refugees at the southern border of the U.S. that has come after the assassination of Haiti's president and the most recent of many, many natural disasters that has left an already deeply impoverished population reeling. Quoted from a Vox article, Border Patrol agents on horseback were hounding Haitian migrants near the U.S.-Mexico border. More than 14,000 of whom were camped, I know a lot, under the Del Rio Bridge on September 19th. The uniformed men swung their long horse reins, which many interpreted as whips, to keep the migrants from crossing into Texas. The Vox article we read had photos, but obviously since this is a podcast, you can't see them like we did. But they were eerily reminiscent of imagery of slave patrols in the South and police beating protesters during the Civil Rights Movement, and many other heinous acts that resonate very deeply with the American people. For these Haitian immigrants, America is definitely not what they expected it to be. I mean, they may not have expected open arms, but being beaten with horse reins, like, that's not something that you think about when you think of America.
Cruel.
It's still astonishing. 14,000 under, like, one bridge.
I mean, just like we were talking about in Islamophobia, like, we don't really know what's going on in other worlds until it comes to the U.S. Like, I didn't know anything about the Haitian president being assassinated or the earthquakes that were happening in Haiti until I heard it. And I only heard it because they were coming into the U.S. and the U.S. made it our business, so.
What is it called? You only really hear about bad things when it's happening in your country. I think it's kind of sad how, like, something bad, something terrible could happen in another country, and you don't really hear about it over here. You guys are talking about the president, and the hurricanes and things like that. So, I feel like our world in general would be a better place if we heard about things that happened and we could try to help, like, other places. Like, we could try to send help to people in Haiti that are, don't have homes because of the hurricane.
Mm-hmm.
And I think our country could be a lot better at just helping other people. So,
yeah.
And thank you. We have too many things to work on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely.
All right. Thank you for listening to Caution. Remember to stay cautious.
As you just heard from Willa, thanks again for listening to Caution. And as I sit here doing the final edits to this podcast, I'm just thinking of how us as 8th graders are so lucky to be able to have these conversations and to do a project like this that is so different from anything we've ever done before. So I want to thank Ms. Sandoval for giving us this project in the first place. And then I would also like to thank all of my amazing, amazing group members for having a wonderful conversation.